Well, how's it going, everybody? This is Tim, and we are on vacation this week. That's right. There isn't a new show, so to speak, but we will be talking about Dragon Con in a way. Dragon Con, the annual science fiction, pop culture, gaming event in downtown Atlanta that happens every Labor Day weekend, is not happening this year, at least in its traditional sense, but it is happening virtually, and we will tell you all about that in just a second. Back in July of this year, earlier this year, if you can believe it, it feels like 100 years ago, we had on one of our favorite guests that we have on a couple times every year, Mr. Dan Carroll, who is the Director for Media Relations for Dragon Con. And you can check that episode out if you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. It's Season 5, Episode 28, which came out again on July 7th. And he's talking all about what they had planned for Virtual Dragon Con this weekend. So you can also give that episode a listen, or you can also go to dragoncon.org and check out everything that they're offering. I think they're even doing a hallway costume contest this year, so you can get your cosplay fix in. I know a lot of people put a lot of work into that all year long, so let's hope that, you know, there's going to be a chance to show all that off. You can also follow Dragon Con on Twitter at Dragon Con, and that'll send you off in multitudes of directions so you can keep track of what's going on. So again, check out everything for Dragon Con goes virtual, dragoncon.org, and please enjoy this episode. And it's our first show that we ever recorded at Dragon Con. Features me, Jeff, Ira Malkin, and Steph Swain, who recorded an experience for us. This is episode 39, going way back to 2016, September 7th, 2016. The show was titled Deadpool and Harley Quinn Everywhere. You can listen to it. You can go back and listen to the original, or just, you know, plug this in if you've never heard it. It's our recap show, telling you everything that we did. We spoke with Dan Carroll, of course, down at the Hyatt Regency. We also spoke to a couple of radios who stopped by to visit us. We had a moment with Judge Reinhold, you know, the actor Judge Reinhold, Billy from Beverly Hills Cop, among many other things. And we even had a nice sit-down interview with Film Threat founder Chris Gore, and that's very entertaining as well. Ira eats some old trading card gum, and in fact, we even opened some packs from the late 1970s and early 1980s. So enjoy our show, our first ever show that we recorded from Dragon Con. Again, it's episode 39 from September 7th, 2016. Deadpool and Harley Quinn everywhere. Remember, this weekend is Labor Day weekend, and if you're old enough, like we are, older than the hills, the Gen X, who are getting a little long in the tooth, try to think about Jerry Lewis, Ed McMahon, Tony Orlando, Charo, Sammy Davis Jr., all those people that appeared on your TV screen each and every Labor Day weekend during the Muscular Dystrophy Association's Jerry Lewis Telethon. It was a non-stop source of entertainment every single year for just about 3 days. And Jeff and I have told all those tales before. We used to volunteer at our local ABC station, and it was a chance to raise money but also mess around and act like idiots at a TV station when you're in high school. What else are you going to do? Stick around to the end of the show. We're going to talk about our wonderful sponsors, and we will be back next week with a brand new show. Joining us will be Ming Chen, whom we've had on the show before. In fact, last year when we did our big pre-Dragon Con show, he'll be on to tell us all about virtual Dragon Con and what's going on with him. So thanks for listening. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
One of the programs which you hear daily on many of these mutual stations begins like this.
These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's time for Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews, Ira Malkin, Steph Swain, and Jeff Leboff.
In the Greenbrier room of the, what is this hotel?
Hyatt Regency.
Hyatt Regency. There's the Grand Hyatt and there's the Hyatt Regency. This is in the belly of the beast right here. Right here, the on-site media.
Place.
Place?
Place.
Media room.
Media room. Jeff, get on that microphone.
The headquarters. I'm on the microphone. Can you hear me?
No, I want you to wrap your lips around it.
Wait, I'll turn them up.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Got our little cards here. We've been here. This is our third day here at Dragon Con. I got Jeff a present, by the way. Let's open up. Jeff's going to live open some packs. He's opening up ALF packs. Tops ALF cards.
Get out of here.
The gum.
That I bought at the vendor area. Yeah, look at this fucking gum.
Oh, those are vintage.
Sweet obviously. Sticker, man.
What is that, the Noid?
No, it's ALF Boolia Baseball.
Boolia Baseball. And look at that gum, man. That is 30-year-old gum.
It's an ALF sticker. Get in there, Ira.
Yeah, get some of that gum.
Seriously. No, I will. Look.
Don't you dare. Are you going to put that in your mouth? Let's get a picture of it.
Like now,
I
want to
see. Get it on your tongue. I want to see it.
The dude's drinking vintage Crystal Pepsi on YouTube.
Yeah, it throws up. Yes, yeah. I've seen that. That guy is a disgusting pig. But am I disgusting for watching it? You know those videos where the guys will eat the old stuff?
Wait, hold on. I think I'm hallucinating.
Yeah, you are. He's tripping. Now you're opening the Three's Company's cards. Those are from the 70s, so we may have like 40-year-old gum right there. Look at that. 40-year-old gum.
That was horrible.
Oh, it's one of those ones where you collect it and there's a picture on the back, too, that you got to put the whole.
Yeah, and you make a poster.
Together. Yeah.
Let's see. Hold them up so I can get a picture of Chrissy Snow. See, oh, God. Suzanne Summers, baby.
Nice. Look, let me see. A bunch of stickers.
Sweet.
Three stickers in
nice
there.
Nice John Ritter sticker. Oh, Norman Fell. Mm-hmm. Let's get a shot of that.
How was the vendor area?
Vendor area right now, this morning, earlier, because they're about an hour ago. Vendor area this time of day is when you want to get here and go. For future reference, I went there yesterday.
Steph was bummed out by the vendor area.
Yesterday.
Just because how packed it was.
She was really looking forward to looking around at all the stuff.
I want to, too.
For sale, but she went in there, went down one row, and was like, that's it, fuck this.
Yeah, she and I looked at each other. I'm like, you ready to get out of here? She went, mm-hmm. But, you know, they've had to move it, and it's been over there for a couple of years.
Well, when we
now.
First started coming to Dragon Con, the Walk of Fame used to be in the Hilton.
Yep.
In the big room in the Hilton, like downstairs. And then in the Marriott, where the Walk of Fame is now, was where the vendor area was, or one of the vendor areas.
Right.
And then that got so big, I guess they decided to move all the vendors to the America's Mart, and they put them on two different floors. That's why I can't understand why it's so crowded there.
Well, isn't one of them just the like the artists and stuff, and then the other
one? The art show is in a different place.
Okay,
so there's two floors just of people vending stuff inside America's Mart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty crowded in there apparently a lot of times.
Well, that's...
But yeah, if you get there at this hour, maybe it's not so bad.
It was crowded, but you could move around. You could not move around yesterday when Steph and I went in there.
So is there anything that
Saturday
you saw
is the most crowded day
that you really wanted that you just could not afford?
Yeah, a couple things.
Yeah, like what?
I like to get those old DVDs, but first of all, I don't have a DVD player connected to my TV.
I just use my PlayStation.
Well, I don't have that either. I have one, but
I'll
don't have it
one.
Connected.
Oh, I see.
Well, we don't have it connected because, you know, nowadays you don't need to get everything streaming. But... You know, they have stuff that's out of print, bootleg things and VHS tapes. And
stuff you can only find at cons, too.
Right.
Like stuff that's not released on DVD, like that old
the Star
Roger
Wars
Corman
Holiday.
Fantastic Four movie. And
well, have you ever seen that?
No, I want to. I've seen the documentary about it. We could talk to Chris about it, too. He appears in that documentary.
Chris who?
Chris Gore, our guest, when he shows up.
All right. Now, tell me who Chris Gore is. Let's get a little, because I didn't do any research.
He was the publisher of Film Threat magazine. Do you remember Film Threat
magazine? I do. I remember that because I used to cut stuff out of it for collages.
Right. Well, I used to be super into magazines when I was younger.
Zines. It was an underground movie zine.
Right.
I'd get Fangoria.
But it got to be like a legit, glossy, published magazine.
Didn't Larry, it have Larry, Flint, to do with Larry Flint?
Yeah, Larry Flint Publications published it.
Okay.
So
look, here he comes, folks. Here he comes. He's coming over.
I like
that
film.
Was how I learned about Kevin Smith.
I don't have headphones, but...
Who's creeping? You can sit down, Dan. Hi, Dan everybody. Carroll. Dan Carroll's here.
My name is Dan Carroll. I'm the Media Relations Director for DragonCon, and I love Radio Labyrinth.
Wow. Thank you. Here, Dan, I got you a card. We have cards now.
We love Dan, too.
Sorry, I was kind of a bumbling idiot the other day when I came to get our passes.
No, you were fine. It's a complicated system, but we have to keep the system in place to protect the integrity of our badges.
I know, but for the record, I think I was effing up.
Well, you can't walk around going, we don't need those stinking badges, because you're not going to get in anywhere.
No.
Can I tell you something, Dan? That the staff of each of these hotels, the people that work here for the hotels and not DragonCon, right, they're very nice people.
I often wondered, are there actual...
Well, he's giving us cards.
People
I don't get one.
Staying in the hotels. I mean, maybe there's people here for the game yesterday, but are there just regular guests who, like, just came to stay in the hotel not related to DragonCon? Like, oh, I got a...
I was looking for that.
I got a business meeting in Atlanta on Tuesday.
Well, they've sold out months ago.
Right,
so.
I know. But I wonder if people just happen to be a regular normie and walking around.
I just came back from lunch over at the Omni Food Court. And sometimes I just need to take a break, walk away. And what a different vibe it is just a few blocks away at this time of day.
Really?
And obviously a lot of the folks at the Omni. Now, we do have a big block at the Omni. They're a good partner for us. Yeah. But, man, it's a different vibe in that food court than the one in Peachtree Center.
I was there yesterday because I was doing two things. I was here, and then I went over and covered the Fan Fest, the Chick-fil-A kickoff game.
Excellent.
And there were so many red shirts for Georgia and so many light blue shirts for the Tar Heels. And, by the way, Georgia did win. It was a great game.
Excellent.
And it was a cool vibe, but there were also people in costume walking around inside of the CNN Center, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, I saw some people with jerseys and, like, makeup on.
Yeah, that's what I saw over there.
Yeah,
that's what I like to see. Now, I'm a big college football fan. I actually used to work at UNC, so I'm a little sad Georgia won. I'm an ACC guy.
Okay,
yeah.
So, you've told us before.
But it's a confession I make. But, man, I just think it's really, really awesome. So
SEC didn't do so hot yesterday.
I didn't say I have not seen anything besides DragonCon.
Spoiler alert.
So
LSU got killed.
There you go.
But the Georgia game is great. Nick Chubb, boom, 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 all the way.
You know what? I got Xfinity On Demand.
Uh-huh.
That's sponsor of DragonCon. Uh-huh. I'm going to go ahead and look at those games later in the week.
Nice.
So we're in the thick of DragonCon. There's what? 2 days left? Day and a half left.
A day and a half left. Actually, tomorrow's the first time. Monday's going to be a really powerful full day.
Shatner's coming Monday, right?
Shatner. I like DragonCon. I can see my
show that he's on is pretty funny if you've...
Oh, the Better Late Than Never.
Better Late Than Never, yeah.
Is that a new show?
Yeah, it's really two episodes old. It's like a reality show.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I've watched both of them.
Oh, okay.
They go to him, Henry Winkler, Terry Bradshaw, and George Foreman. And comedian Jeff Dye, who's there for some reason. I don't understand why he's there.
Probably just friends with him.
Yeah.
So we have Dan here. And yes, we do. Like we
and
are,
Dan's right. Wallet that looks like George Costanza's wallet with hard candy in it.
It looks like my dad's wallet.
I actually have a beard because I worked with an Indian gentleman who walked into work one day and said, I have seen you on show last night. It's called Seinfeld. You are just like this chair. I grew a beard to not look like Jason Alexander.
So this time, you're four days in or three?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
So 4 days in.
I got here Wednesday.
Wednesday, 5 days in. How tired are you? And are you running on steam or do you get enough sleep? Where do you stay? What do you do? I mean, because you're really busy.
Well, one of the commitments I made to myself was I was going to walk less than 20 miles this year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I made the commitment to cut my walking in half, and I did that, and my pedometer said 45 miles.
Holy cow.
So what I did was this year I learned to delegate a little bit and trust some people to do the running around and use telecommunications. One thing I want to shout out to folks in the city of Atlanta, whether especially Verizon, I have not had any problems with phone signal this year. This first year at DragonCon, I've not had problems with phone signal.
Oh, good.
So I was able to keep in touch with my team. And also, in terms of being tired, I had two 10 o'clock appearances. I did comedy two nights in a row at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, was that?
Ira came to my bad one.
That was the bad one? I had a good time.
Did you really? Good, good. I started writing that set at 6 p.m.
Well, it's all right. Yeah. It's like crowd work, you know?
It was. It was exactly it. I always say my funniest thing I've ever seen on stage in Atlanta is Kevin Jalise trying to get lights to work at Dad's Garage. Uh-huh. It was hilarious.
Yeah. Dad's Garage panel tonight at 7 o'clock, too.
Fantastic. They deserve it. They are a great group of folks. I was talking to Mark Meir last night and how much he loves coming to Atlanta, coming to Dad's Garage, and coming to DragonCon. That's the other thing he said. He loves coming to DragonCon. Anyway, so last night I did Project Cosplay, which is customers make costumes on the fly with models, and I'm one of the judges who make fun of them.
And since you're at DragonCon, do you have to make sure that people don't have a costume on when they come into the...
Oh, no, Project Cosplay works. Everybody strips down to their... Oh, yeah, yeah, no, no. The models are picked ahead of time.
Okay.
The designers are picked from the audience, from people who don't actually make costumes.
Okay, oh, perfect.
So that's good. Yeah. So, but I'm dead tired, and I'm holding up my head, and as soon as it's my turn to talk, I snap. But I started getting snapshots from a young lady that I know of, you look so... thrilled to be here. Mm-hmm. Of me with my head into my head. So
I saw on Facebook that it was packed.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I made all my friends promise they would come, and all of them showed up on time, and none of them got in. And a reporter told me he bumped into my daughter waiting online.
That's
oh, well.
Funny.
Sorry, honey.
I guess she knows not to text you and bother you.
The point is that she should have been there 20 minutes earlier to get in. I don't know how much the room filled, but 1/3 of the people online got sent home.
Wow. So, they were turning people away from the Aqua Teen panel yesterday. Yeah. We got there an hour early, so we were fine, but they capped the line, and some people were pretty disappointed, but... That room was a double room, but it still had a huge crowd for the Aqua Teen panel.
Well, folks who've been to DragonCon this year, the one thing I say is if you've downloaded the app, put that comment down. Mm-hmm. Let us know that the panel that you wanted to see, you weren't able to get in, and say it by name, and not just Project Cosplay, which would be cool for me, mm-hmm. but for all the panels, because that way...
Oh, yeah, then you'll have some feedback and know to maybe put it in a bigger room next
time.
Right.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're going to be expanding to accommodate the love the city has for Atlanta, and, you know, the way we have the 5 host hotels, but we sell out 24 partner hotels total.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the partner hotels can be anywhere from the airport to Midtown. And, you know, we want to make sure everybody has fun. But let us know what we're missing. I remember one time, first year we had steampunk here. They had a steampunk party.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, they put it in the room I was in last night.
Lots
that had a capacity of 350. So I guess 350 is how many people came to see us last night. But there's a capacity of 350. 1,000 showed up.
Jeez.
Yeah. Wow.
And the next year, it moved to the largest ballroom outside of the Hyatt. So we do listen to stuff like that, but we don't know everything, so we want you to tell us through that app.
What's the hottest thing this year, Pokemon? In your opinion, what do you think, Dan?
So here's an irony.
Mm-hmm.
Our Pokemon panels have not been filled.
No.
No. Pokemon Go, we expected that to be one of the biggest panels. It was put in the largest room available to gaming, and it was not filled. However, the wrestler, Austin,
mm-hmm.
his panel turned away a lot of people.
Wow.
That was completely filled, and, you know, we loved it. This guy started mentioning the DragonCon app and showed it on WEE Raw Monday.
Or WWE Raw?
Yeah, WWE. That's
really?
What it's called. Yeah.
Raw.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, the last time I watched wrestling's Bruno Sammartino.
So you haven't watched it in
a
while.
No, I have not.
Isn't that the guy that our friend Stu slapped?
No, Gorilla Monsoon.
Oh, Gorilla.
No. Stu slapped the Magnificent Morocco. His dad was friends with Gorilla Monsoon.
Right.
Though one time at a 7-Eleven in Woodbridge, New Jersey, mm-hmm. I bumped into Sergeant Slaughter. Oh. In his Sergeant Slaughter mobile.
Yeah?
It was awesome. I was 14. It
did
was
he put you in the sleeper hold? No, what did he call it? The Cobra Clutch.
No, he just made sure I didn't shoplift and stayed in school.
Okay.
That's what they always say. Stay in school. Don't shoplift.
Speaking of that, I saw the coverage of, was it Thursday night's wrestling event?
Oh, how was it?
It was packed, and people looked like they were having a great time.
Well, I'd never gone to wrestling until 2 years ago, and I made it a point since then to go on Friday night.
Right.
Thursday night is the one night I'm a paperworking Department of Motor Vehicle type paperwork all night long. So I don't get to see anything Thursday night, but it was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
I heard, so.
We've been having a great time. Yesterday, I interviewed people on the street, so we'll have some of that audio.
Yeah, what are the numbers like this year? Is there any kind of estimate yet?
No, we're going to tell you tomorrow. We're still sticking with the 75,000. It's an increase of 5,000 from last year.
It seems like it.
I've heard numbers floating around that were astronomically large, but I've heard that for years. I love when people tell me about Dragon Con.
The app is phenomenal, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Those guys were behind it have done an incredible job. I use it this year. As Tim knows and you guys know now, I don't do a whole lot of Dragon Con, so my actual personal schedule is like three items.
Yeah.
I have a party I go to, well, two parties I go to Saturday night, and this year I had two performances, and those were the only two things I did. That was it.
Looking on your Facebook site, what am I, an idiot? Looking at your Facebook, I saw a picture of you with your arm around a very delightful-looking young lady, very attractive young lady.
Yes, that is Dana Schneider.
Yes.
Dana Schneider. Dana is from Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yeah.
No, I got to meet my musical crush, Ellie Michalka, yesterday, and I got to keep it completely cool and sedate while I was talking to her, and I lost it afterwards. I'm here at Dragon Con because I'm a fanboy, let's face it.
Right, but, of course, we all are.
But I love my zombie.
You talked about Richard Hatch. I'm like, oh, damn, I haven't gotten a chance to talk to Richard this year.
He was at the coffee shop upstairs, and no one was bugging him except one dude, so I just took some pictures.
He's a great guy. Yeah.
Apollo's Eric.
So I went out of my way to talk to people this year. I didn't talk to many. I got a picture with Sam J. Jones and my entire New Reporter tour here at Dragon Con. He talked to all the reporters, sold the stuff, and I got to talk to Melody Anderson, who was supposed to have been
both
on my radio.
Oh
my gosh, she looked great. She was supposed to be on my radio show. I had a radio show, the station went off the air.
Oh,
so.
Well, that sucks.
like literally, we were planning sometime later in the month.
And
that was it. It was gone. She was stunning and a big fan of really bad music. And that's not true. It's not really bad music. I just like pop music. I like bubblegum music. I grew up on 1910 Fruit Gum Company and the Monkees and the Partridge Family. And
the good
still,
stuff.
Yeah, well, I think it's still that stream.
The Monkees outsold the Beatles. That's it.
Yes,
back in the day.
Why, what's she listening to?
Oh, who? Oh, Ally Michalka is a Disney singing star with her sister. And she's my ringtone. So I also like Demi Lovato and Selena Gomez.
It's funny how Dragon Con permeates the entire city. I got a Lyft rider yesterday. He was an older gentleman, kind of looked like Santa Claus. And he was telling me that a couple years ago he was here, and he came just to see the girl from Heroes. What's her name? She's on Nashville now.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Hayden Panettiere.
Yeah, Hayden Panettiere.
I always call her Planeteer.
Yeah.
That's Hayden Panettiere, yeah. She's actually, she was delightful when
was she was
here. I didn't get to talk to her, but you could see her across the room. She was so pretty, she radiated.
Guy said, exactly what he said.
And there's the oddest, Elizabeth Rome, I think is her name, was the prettiest woman we've ever had at Dragon Con, in my opinion. And she was the lawyer who was fired from Law and Order for being listed as one of the 50 worst things on television by TV Guide. But man, I walked in the room and there were 200 people in there, and just your eyes are just drawn to her. And I don't mean that in a creepy way, just like it's like a work of art, kind of. But Hayden Panettiere was, but we have many, many guests, and not all of them are just stunningly beautiful.
Speaking of
Judge Reinhold was beautiful.
He was stunningly beautiful.
How was he?
He was great. He was so
super
nice.
Fantastic.
He was like, hey, how are you? And I asked him.
That's pretty good.
I said, have some coffee. You know, he had just gotten some coffee. He goes, I had no idea how far we had to walk.
Well, that's it. He showed up about 20 minutes late for his panel.
Oh, he did?
And he said, he goes, as of like 10 minutes ago, I didn't know that my panel was in a hotel that was two hotels away from where I was. He goes, I'm sorry for that, but they got me here. So
well, that's really good. he should put that information in the app.
Yes.
So that we can adjust for next year.
So somebody can get him earlier.
Dana Snyder was commenting about how on the back of their badges, the where they print their schedules, that it's in like a micro print from a bank check. He said, I have glasses, but I need like three pairs of glasses to be able to see what I'm doing.
Also information that should go into the app.
So everything should go into the app.
Everything should go into the app.
I love the app and the what's going on right now part of the app.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part.
I got here early today so I could get to a couple of things I wanted to do that were difficult for me yesterday just because it was so packed.
Did you get Katie Sackhoff's autograph?
I didn't get her autograph. I walked by her and looked at her because I've never seen her in person, and I think she's adorable. I don't want to spend the money. I'm cheap. But anyway, I just wanted to see her and look at her. And she had a huge line, and I'm very happy to see that because she's on a hit show now that's on Netflix.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the best show, even though Jeff disagrees, my favorite sci-fi show of all time is Battlestar Galactica. Is that John? No, it's not John, even though it looks...
Oh, that is John's duplicate. I started talking to him about John's badges yesterday.
Yeah. That looked like John Water.
I saw a guy doing a Dan Carroll cosplay in this hotel when I came for the Judge Reinhold panel. There was a gentleman he was not working the information booth, but talking to the people in the information booth.
Stop tapping the table.
And I almost went up to him and said, "Hey, Dan!" But then I realized it was not him. It was not you. But
it was a Dan Carroll cosplay. Every year, I don't think people are actually cosplaying me. However, this year's treat, big surprise, I don't have them with me. They're in my room. Somebody gave me a pair of cufflinks that just happened to accidentally feature a man's face with a giant beard, bald head. And I'm like, well, that is ironic that my cufflinks match. Because I wore a tux yesterday. So
yeah, I've seen you in the tux before.
Yeah, you've seen me in tux.
You know what I liked is that your initials are the same as Dragon Con's.
I like that so much. Yeah. If only we could move to Georgetown, it would be D.C., at D.C., in D.C.
Oh, yeah. The triple D.C.
And no,
D.C.
We're never leaving Atlanta. We are tied to this city.
And even though it gets tight and even though it gets crowded, please never leave downtown. It's so great just to be able to walk around the city.
Well, maybe it's a big city.
It is.
There's still so many more spaces we can use.
Yeah, are they looking at any additional hotels or spaces around here to move into for the future?
I'm going to say I have my theories, but I have no official word on that. In fact, I don't even have any speculation, do I even have hints.
Could you get more of the America's Mart than you're using?
Well, that I can tell you. There's still in another building at America's Mart. Plus, there's many, many stores we're not using in the buildings that we are using. I think we're only using half the space available in those two buildings, and then we can move into a third.
You can get weapons in one room, toys in another, T-shirts in another. Because that was the other place I couldn't get into yesterday. And I went in and...
Saturday is the biggest crowd, though, so you got to take that into account.
But today I went in and I got Jeff this present, Dan. I got him a pack of Three's Company cards and a pack of Alf cards.
Oh, come and knock on our door.
Yes, and we saved you the gum. The 30-year-old and the 40-year-old gum.
You know, had I not already had your stomach upset today, I might take that there.
I tested it for you.
The 30-year-old gum was broken into three pieces. Ira ate one piece.
Yeah. How'd it go?
The 40-year-old gum is still solid in one piece.
I'm hallucinating. This is not really.
So I once went to a museum in Vicksburg, and they had a ship that had crashed in the Mississippi, covered with mud during the Civil War, and they dug it up in the 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
And when they pulled everything out, not only did they find that sailors, I assume, but they found ketchup and mustard packets.
Oh, wait.
Well, bottles.
Bottles, yeah.
Bottles of, and both the mustard and the ketchup was edible.
Wow.
I don't know.
There's a difference between edible and taste good, though.
Yeah, edible.
It's in a glass bottle.
Hey, yeah, I know that guy.
That's the guy I met. I met this gentleman at the Judge Reinhold panel.
It's Chris. Are you recording? Yeah, we're recording.
There's no such thing as an interruption with Radio Labyrinth. We support Radio Labyrinth here at DragonCon.
Ignore me.
Come on in.
Grab a seat if you want.
I think so.
Gentlemen, I'll go ahead and... Oh, you want to... I'll go ahead and let you guys go.
He's a fan and a radio.
Fantastic.
Dan, I want to shake your hand, my friend. You don't have to get up.
Always.
Please don't get up if you don't want to. Chris is a fan of ours and a fan of mine from back in the day, I imagine. Nice to meet you officially.
Oh, yeah. I've been a fan of yours since the beginning.
Does he make cheese?
Chris, do you make cheese?
I enjoy cheese, all but right. I don't make cheese. Oh, sorry.
Hop on the fan. Yes. So you're going to be on Radio Labyrinth this week.
Well, that's awesome.
Recognized my voice at the Judge Reinhold panel.
You recognize Jeff's voice.
Well, of course. I mean, that voice, how do you not recognize that?
I can't even do an impression of Jeff.
And the funny thing is, I changed my seat because I wanted to be close to the door because I had to leave early.
Yeah.
And then I'm just sitting there and I hear this voice and I'm like, oh my God, it's Jeff. Because at that point, I didn't know where you were going to be. You know? Yeah. I didn't know if I'd be able to meet you.
I was sweeping hair until 5 o'clock on Friday at Mary Todd Hairdressing Co.
That is where I want to get my hair done, if I had hair.
How about a beard trim?
They do beards.
We'll talk.
Okay.
We'll talk. I think Melissa Eppers of Rogue will be mad at me.
Oh.
She owes me a haircut.
Okay.
You I mean helped a buzz. Her get married.
Well, yeah, you got to stick with those people.
But if I was inside the perimeter and not way out in the boonies, I would definitely go to Mary Todd.
Okay.
So that's an official endorsement from Dan. But I do want to excuse myself, guys, not because I really dislike Chris. Chris seems awesome. but because I'm still working here. You asked me about planning and stuff earlier. I was going to say, today is my day to plan 2017. So let me go ahead and do stuff and come to DragonCon. It's a lot of fun. www.dragoncon.org. And remember, next year, guys, you cannot miss our partner show, MomoCon.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much fun. You get a lot of amazing voice actors. You get the gaming guests. You get the largest gaming space in the Southeast.
That's going to be my first MomoCon, and I want to go.
Excellent. We got you down already, guys.
All right, Ben.
Oh, I'm not the spokesman there. I'm just the paperwork guy.
Okay, fine.
Bye, guys.
See you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Hey, radios. I'm just extremely grateful that I got to go Saturday because it was totally kick-ass. I had an awesome, crazy good time. And the Liboff was my co-pilot, my guide, if you will. And he was pretty great, man. We stopped at Gus's Fried Chicken on the way in, which was perfect. I don't know if you've eaten at Gus's, but Jesus God, this double dredge that they do on their chicken, son of a bitch. It is amazing. And Jeff's a picky patty, and I'm telling you, Jeff was all about it, so we were definitely on the same page with that. And I did also get to put Jeff on a little thing called hot sauce and honey, which I cannot believe he's been on the earth this long and did not know about. But as I stated, now he's been put on, and his life is changing from what he tells me. But anyway, Jeff and I, we had a great time after we, you know, totally gorged at Gus's and we got pie.
Hell, pie.
So just to let you know, we wanted to make sure that we were going to be full throughout this whole thing and a little sick. And that's pretty much what happened. But once we got there, I can't tell you how overwhelmed I was. I mean, you hear people talking about it. I'll see it on the news and stuff every year, but until you see, I mean, you really, literally, you cannot even look anywhere for there's some amazing, cool costume. I mean, the money that people spend on this stuff has got to be, I can't even imagine, but, you know, it's like one second I see Ash Mule Dead, like a really good Ash, too, not some hokey, crappy one, you know, or the whole cast from Bob's Burgers.
Who's that in the background?
That's my friend Ken.
Why is he like that?
He's an albino.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never met Ken. Is he real or imaginary?
He's real and he does improvised hip-hop.
Okay, how old is he?
He's 28.
You can't have a 28-year-old albino friend.
The guitar player for Mad Max. I mean, this guy that put this guitar together. I mean, Jesus. And it, like, played. You know, he had, like, a little where it was really cool. And then, you know, then there was, like, a Deadpool.
Wait! You may be wondering why the red suit. Well, that's so bad guys can't see me bleed.
A Deadpool, and there was a lot of Deadpool. I don't know if you guys got that. Lots of Deadpool up in there.
It's just confusing. Is it sexist to hit you? Is it more sexist to not hit you? I mean, the line gets real blurry.
And there were a lot of Harley Quinns. That was another popular one this year.
Wee, wahoo,
whoopee!
Yay, yay, yay!
A lot of good ones. A lot of back to the drawing board ones, but, you know, it was a mixed bag. It's kind of what makes the whole thing kind of a fun good time. And something I totally love, tons of Ricks from Rick and Morty. That just delighted me beyond belief.
And that's why I always say, shum shum, slippity dop, grass tastes bad.
One of my favorites was the surly curb smoker Rick that sat out in front of the Marriott. Somebody walked by and he just said, "Hey, screw you, Rick." And curbside Smokey Rick says, "Peace among worlds, motherfucker.
Lick, lick, lick my balls." Yeah, say that all the time.
And I don't know, it got me. I really enjoyed that. But anyway, you know, aside from all the cool costumes, the Walk of Fame was really neat. I got to see one of my childhood heroes who I thought was the most beautiful goddess in the world besides Linda Carter, which was Miss Erin Gray. And that was truly a delight for me. Thanks so much to Dan Carroll for, you know, coming on the show and being so cool like he always is. And thanks to Dragon Con for allowing me to come in there and see what a crazy ass spectacle you guys put on every year. So anyway, and Tim and Ira and Jeff, eat a dick. See you next week.
Hey, Radio Labyrinth is brought to you by Atlanta Pizza and Gyro, who are open. And you can go to their website and find out all that information. You can go in there, sit down, have yourself a nice, delicious meal. Bring the family. They have a great staff and a great owner. Atlanta Pizza in Gyro. Their website is atlantapizzagyro.com. You can order online and when you order online, you can do pickup or delivery. And you don't have to pay till you get there. So don't worry about that. You don't have to pay ahead of time. Atlanta Pizza in Euro wants to thank everyone who has been supportive to them and to other restaurants through these tough times for the entire industry. And listen, if you have been to Atlanta Pizza in Euro, I implore you, please leave a review on Google. And we can't forget our friend Brett Perkins, who I did reach out to.
Brett Perkins, I said.
But I haven't heard back from him. Get Brett Perkins, I said, the super across the way. And his business, LDI Repro Printing of Athens. They have all of your construction printing needs, commercial or residential, in Athens since 2005 with a fast turnaround and affordable prices. Call 706-316-9366 or email them at athens@ldiline.com. Thank you, Jeff. So, Chris, welcome.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Yeah, I had no idea I'd be on the show. I'm not an experienced radio guy, so...
You sound good.
Know. All right, well, awesome.
Neither are these two.
Yeah, none of us know what the hell we're doing.
And I'm looking at this guy over here in his costume, and he's kind of giving us...
Is he with you?
Are you with us?
Yes.
How?
Listen to the podcast.
Oh, yeah? My God. Welcome. Come on over. Have a seat.
So what have you guys done so far?
He needs more room.
We've walked around...
Yeah. At all? Have you been to any panels or anything?
We went to two. Oh, Jeff's been to more panels. I'm not usually.
I went
usually
to the Judge Reinhold
panel
where we met, and I went to the Aqua Teen panel yesterday.
I went to that too.
The Judge Reinhold panel was great. Yeah. He told some great stories.
Yeah.
I was surprised how entertaining that was.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
So, Ira, why don't
you want to hold this?
Sure.
Tell us
who
about
you are.
Your costume.
Who
yeah.
I am? I am Dormammu, which was a demon from Doctor Strange. In the comic book days. This is like the throwback to Steve Ditko artwork and stuff. So
okay.
Hopefully he'll be the surprise villain at the end of the movie coming up in November.
The movie looks fantastic.
Did you watch the trailer?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know what? That they did a parody of this character on the Venture Brothers, which is why when you walked in, I yelled, "Ignore me!" Because that's all the character said. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that's
so
that whole
show.
Some of
your references, you're a little younger than me, so I have a hard time with it.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it when you do go back and, you know, in the old stuff.
Okay, cool.
So well, I have a good time, and y'all do a really good job because I wind up watching and listening to things that I normally wouldn't.
Oh, that's cool.
With all your picks, staff picks and stuff.
Yeah.
So...
How long did it take you to put this? This, by the way, we'll put pictures up on Facebook, but how long, and you'll see them before you hear this, how long did it take you to put this together?
I have no idea.
No?
Because it's one of those things where you kind of...
How heavy is it?
It's
it
not heavy at all.
No?
No. It's all foam.
Okay. I thought it was wood.
Yeah, it's very...
It's one of those things where it's like, you know, you get a couple hours here and there.
Yeah.
And you just get, you know, like, oh, I need this. So you got to stop.
Right.
Go buy it or, you know, get the tools that you don't have.
Right.
And do it.
Well, that's cool. So,
looks great.
Thank you.
Man, this is so exciting to me because two people who listen to our show actually came all the way over here to the Hyatt into the belly of the beast, which is the basement pretty much in the Greenbrier
room. Yeah, this is way downstairs.
You guys have no idea how much this means to us, so thank
you. It means to you, jeez.
Yeah. Well, seriously, I mean, to have fans and to go out of your way, that means you're a fan.
Well, like I said, I've been a fan of yours since the early days of the Regular Guys. I can remember back when you, one of the first voices I remember is, what was it, Lester Chalmers? About the
Lester Chalmers?
Yeah, the human zoo and stuff like that.
That was Travis Elliott.
Well, oh, that's right. Yeah.
Travis Elliott.
So I remember that. And then obviously I followed you, you know, through the Regular Guys and all that stuff. And then now that you've got your own podcast, and you're great with Eric on his show. Just, you know, it's
fun. It's fun. You know, when I got let go last year from the other place, I decided, listen, I'm going to wait and see what happens. So I gave it a year, and I'm still chugging away with Eric, still chugging away doing this podcast. And then, you know, during the week, I sweep up hair, and I wash hair, and I take phone calls. And I love working at that barbershop. I mean, they're great. They're fans. They heard me bitching, and they said, come on down and work here. So now I could walk. If you want your hair cut, come on down and I'll wash your hair.
And I think the sign of a really funny person is when you can make another funny person laugh, because Eric's funny.
Yeah.
Even though that's not his focus. He's political, of course. But he's really funny. So the way you crack him up, it's just a testament to how funny you are.
Well, thank you.
You know, so I really find it very entertaining when Eric really goes nuts.
And when Autumn and I get on our little improv jags and he's just losing it, that makes me laugh. So
I like the way the two of you guys like play off of each other.
Me and Autumn or me and Eric?
Well, both.
Yeah.
But especially you and Autumn, whenever you start doing the characters and you start going, you know, like back and forth.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Well, thank you. Can you tell us your real name?
Buckmore.
Buckmore, okay. Now I know who you are.
Ah! I met you
on Facebook.
Yes.
Actually, I met you a couple years ago at Dragon Con when you were here with Brandy in the other station.
Yeah.
And I was doing Doctor Strange.
I have a photo of that.
There we go.
I was looking at all my old photos, and I remember that. So.
So this is sort of my bookends from Doctor Strange to his Dormammu, his enemy.
Nice. I never have dressed up for this. Because I don't look
good.
You
should. It is really, really fun. I didn't for the first couple of years because my daughter kind of wound up getting me into it.
Yeah.
And I saw how much fun she was having. It's amazing.
How old's your daughter?
23.
Now, what does she dress up as?
This year she's dressed up as a gender-bent Captain Hook.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Well, they call that cross-play.
Yes.
Right?
Oh.
Where you do the opposite sex of your character.
So it's basically whatever gender you are, and you transfer it to the opposite.
Okay. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is the Harley Quinn. I mean, that's just an expression.
The collective. I was expecting you were looking at one.
No, the Harley Quinn cosplay this year is off the hook. It's like
I've seen 20-some Harley Quinns and two good ones.
Yeah, there's like, you know what I'm talking
not
about.
Not that you shouldn't cosplay as Harley Quinn if you don't look like Harley Quinn, but the object is
it does help.
Yeah. To do the character justice, you got to kind of look like
you should be smoking hot, right?
Yeah, of course.
I've seen plenty of those in that field, not so much, but you know, it's all for fun.
I like the ones that are in the original Harley Quinn outfit, though, the black and red
outfit from
the old cartoon. I've seen two of those that looked really good and really not much more than that. And I went up to both of them and said, you look fantastic, because I watched that cartoon and that's the Harley Quinn I know, and now she just looks slutty,
right?
Which is fine. I mean, I'm not into Suicide Squad so much, but well, I mean, if you're a heterosexual male, why?
How can you not like it, right?
Right.
Like the two at the parade?
Can't hear you, Ira.
At all?
Nope, not at all. Don't worry. We'll give you the microphone back eventually.
No, it's interesting whenever you have a large movie that affects Dragon Con.
Yes.
Deadpool.
I mean, there's a bazillion Deadpools. And then last year was Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
Mad Max Fury Road, there was like everybody.
There were still quite a few of them this year, too.
Oh, yeah, there's hangers on that wind up, you know, it's like, I've got a good costume and I'm not letting it go for
like the dude with the Matrix costume that he's been wearing every year.
Did you guys see the Deadpool Bob Ross?
Yes.
That made me laugh.
That's hilarious.
Actually, there's a couple other just plain Bob Rosses around.
Yeah.
Which are funny.
Zombie Dude, by the way. The zombie Big Lebowski, or Little the zombie Jeff Lebowski
right.
was great. So
yes.
I had to get a picture of that.
You know what surprised me a little is I've seen quite a few Stranger Things costumes, a handful of 11s.
The Winona Ryder with the handful of LED lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was
and
cool.
the army jacket. She looked great.
Yep, mm-hmm. but she went by too fast.
Right, I wanted to try and grab a picture, but she was in a hurry to get to the Walk of Fame or something.
Just looking at my phone. Ignore me.
Ignore me.
Ignore me.
I highly recommend Venture Brothers for anybody who has never seen it. Start from the beginning. It is a parody of, let's start with Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest.
That is a parody of that genre of shows. And then there are parodies of superheroes and stuff from the 70s and 80s, because these guys are our age. And so they just deconstruct all of that. And the whole show is primarily about failure, but it's great. Super funny and really makes you laugh. Like Johnny Quest is actually on the show, but he's a heroin addict. And they find him living in a thing where his dad left him underneath the water in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Now, wasn't Johnny Quest the original cartoon? Wasn't it the animation where they just did the lips moving?
I think so. Yes.
And it was like the image was still, but then they like superimposed real lips in there.
Oh no, no, that wasn't Johnny Quest. That was something else where they had real lips over them. What was that, Jeff?
I'm trying to think.
Those were so creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, not C-Lab, but something like that.
Something like C-Lab. Yeah. C-Lab was a real show, too.
Yeah.
Not the one with Eric Estrada.
No, I can't remember.
No. Well, we're at a loss. We can't win them all. Well, who are we waiting on, Jeff?
Well, Chris Gore is going to come, but I told him 1 o'clock, so.
Yeah.
He'll probably be here at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, let's take a little bitty break, and let's say thank you again to... Say your name.
Chris Cosentino.
And?
Buck Moore.
Thank you guys very much for coming by here, man.
Oh,
you have
no,
again, it means a lot to us, so thank you.
If you like this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes and like us and give us ratings. We'll read them at the end of the show. Also, follow us on Twitter at @radio_labyrinth and on Facebook, Radio Labyrinth.
What have you got, Mr. Buckman?
I got a cigarette.
I got, Nicolette.
Hey, you guys had shirts on when you came in here.
There's something happened to him, man.
Come on, Spicoli, just put the shirts back on. You see that sign?
No shirt, no shoes,
no dice. So. Right. Learn it. Know it. Live it.
It was a question of once you came behind the scenes, you realize why movies work or why TV shows work. And it's all, sometimes it's just pure like a confluence of talent that just works together, you know? This was not one of those times. Sean Ryan is a wonderful writer. He wrote The Shield. He certainly doesn't have to defend himself. Not Mr. Comedy, and that's no fault of his. He was hired. And then the second thing was, it was a committee thing, you know. And for anybody who's a real fan of the movie, when Don Simpson died, I kind of think he died too, because Don would never let that happen. But anyway, what happened was the network wanted Beverly Hills Cop, but wanted something else too. Christine Lottie is a great actress, but she's not the chief of police in Beverly Hills Cop.
Right.
Okay. And so it was more important to have, which it is important to have, diversity. But it wasn't the movie. The movie's not politically correct. And the movie's funny. It was a great disappointment. It just wasn't. It just wasn't funny, and CBS dropped it, and it was, wow, it was shocking.
We have with us on the Radio Labyrinth podcast, Chris Gore, who is that Chris Gore on Twitter.
Let's get that applause going. You ready, guys?
I'm holding the mic. There you go.
Oh, that sounds, wow, it sounds like a good top of the show. Let's do this.
He was a presenter on Attack of the Show, a show I was a big fan of that disappeared.
Yeah.
They killed the network, right? They,
yeah, all good things must end.
Right? That's true.
I never missed an episode, and you were on every Tuesday.
Wow, that's cool.
Talking about...
You watched the show more than I did.
This was before DVDs. DVR.
Right. Wow.
We're going back to the 90s. Jeff and I have known each other since, I think, 1979.
Oh, wow.
And
that was the year that the Star Trek The Motion Picture came out.
Yes.
Yes, I look forward to that movie quite a bit. I read about it in Starlog magazine.
And did you enjoy it?
Oh. At the time, I was like,
what's this?
I was just happy to see Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Exactly, and the bald chick.
Together in a movie, and the bald chick, the hot bald chick.
Mm-hmm.
That movie actually, like, it's actually aged well, I think. I think it was aspiring to do too much.
Right.
And then, of course, it was a good setup for Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Which is my favorite, followed by The Whales.
Yes, there you go. Everybody loves The Whales.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves those whales.
Chris was also the publisher. Not the editor, right? Another guy was the editor.
Publisher, founder, and editor. I mean, like, when you're doing small press, you pretty much do nine jobs.
Yeah.
Film Threat.
The layout.
Magazine.
The photography. Yeah, yeah. Film Threat magazine.
It was hard to get that magazine when it first came out because we lived in Elmira, New York, near Elmira, New York, which is a very small town. And Jeff's like, you got to get this magazine, Film Threat. It's amazing. And I went and bought it, and I was like, holy shit. It's like Premiere if Premiere didn't suck.
Right. Oh, well, thank you for saying that. That was like the old days of alternative magazine distribution. It was difficult. But what's funny is what you said is it was so hard to find. You know what's not hard to find? Anything anymore.
I know.
Just let's see. I'm just going to see if I can get this on Amazon cheaper.
Yeah.
I'm just going to Google this thing. I found it. Is there this obscure group that exists? Yes, it does.
Yep.
Everything's, you know, two clicks away. It's weird how spoiled we've become.
And your magazine, though, is probably responsible for my Kevin Smith fandom.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan, and I read about him first in your magazine before I ever saw Clerks or anything.
Oh, thank you.
And when Clerks came out, I knew about it because of your magazine and watched the movie three times in a row when I first got it and saw it. I like watched it by myself, and then I said, oh, my God, this is so good. I went and got everyone I could find, and we watched it again. And then they went and got everybody they could find, and we watched it a third time.
Wow.
What year did that movie come out?
Was that 94?
Yeah.
That long ago.
Yeah.
Okay, we're old.
And what year did you start Film Threat?
1985, actually.
Oh, wow.
I was in college. It was my first year in college. And it was like, in high school, I was like, I want to do a punk rock fanzine.
Mm-hmm.
I want it because there were lots of punk rock zines out. There was like music zines and there were skateboard zines.
Right. I used to be totally into those. And
I love those.
Yeah.
But I was a film guy. I'm not, you know, I love music, but like film is my passion. So I was like, well, I want to do a movie magazine, Film Threat. That sounds punk rock. Yeah. So I designed like a logo, all this. It wasn't until I was in college where I met this guy named Andre Seawood, and he wrote some articles. I wrote some articles we put together in the first 6-page Xerox fanzine, which was inspired by the fact that I saw the movie Dune in 1984 and hated that movie with a passion. I'd look forward to that movie for years because Dune was like this seminal book I read in high school that I read every year in high school, and it like changed my life and it was amazing. And then I thought, oh my God, David Lynch, a director that I love and respect, is making this film. He did Eraserhead. I remember reading this article in Cinefantastique magazine. I had such a hard-on for this movie, and my mother, who worked in the publishing business, got me into an early screening, and I saw it, and I was so embarrassed and humiliated, and I thought the movie was terrible, and I was so angry about that the very first issue of Film Threat, which came out February 6, 1985, was there was a parody poster of Dune, and I changed the letter so it said dumb. So and then I wrote a piece about it, but Film Threat was always kind of intended to be like this counterculture, like, you know, we're going to support cult, underground, independent stuff. I mean, but actually the term independent movies didn't exist in 1985.
No? When did it come around?
1989.
Okay.
When Sex, Lies, and Videotape came out.
Right.
You know, Steven Soderbergh, that was the same year that the United States Film Festival changed its name to the Sundance Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
And Steven Soderbergh did this weird thing where he pitch this company like to make an exploitation movie. Yeah, it's exploitation. It's going to be tons of nudity. But then he went off and made an art film.
Right.
So he kept the theatrical rights, but this company had the video rights. So he took it to film festivals. He took it to Sundance. Then it won the Palme d'Or. And that was the year that movie got theatrically released by Miramax and created this thing. It's an independent film.
Right.
Right.
Right. That term, because before that, they called them regional movies. Regional movies, right. Yeah.
So what would be an example of a pre-Sex, Lies, and Videotape regional movie?
There was the movie John Sayles made. A lot of the stuff that John Sayles
okay,
made, yeah. Movies that John Sayles made. But like the purpose of the Sundance Film Festival and the Sundance Institute, which was founded by Robert Redford, was all he noticed that all these filmmakers were making movies and the scripts were bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got this institute together and said, look, we know you have the money. You can make the movie. You have the equipment and the skill. But why don't you, let's put the brakes on this. Let's help you develop the script.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the purpose and the mission of the Sundance Institute, so the Sundance Film Festival.
Roger Corman, would those be considered independent films?
Technically, by today's standard, yes, they would be considered independent films, but they weren't really called that. They were B-movies.
Yeah, okay.
They were
okay.
B-movies.
Yeah,
right. But so it's just interesting to see how these terms have existed
right.
Because now, like previous to Film Threat existing, there wasn't an independent section in the video store. Now, there are no video stores. But
right, right.
But like in the late 80s and 90s, there's a section called independent film.
Right.
Yeah.
And
there used to be a store in Atlanta where it was called Films Worth Seeing or
Movies
Worth Seeing. And you had to go, no matter where you lived, you would drive down there and it was like Blockbuster but cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you got independent.
Well, independent video stores.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. I worked at one when I was in high school. I lied about my age when I was 16. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm 18. And the reason I needed to be over 18 to work there is because they carried porn, which was great. Like now it would be a huge scandal,
right?
If a kid worked there, because I was like taking home porn at 16 years old, porn on VHS. And and I worked there even like through college. I worked at this video store. I had all sorts of odd jobs. And one of the funniest things was, because of course you had to rewind those tapes, was seeing my high school gym teacher come in, return a porn, and we would always see, because the porns would never be rewound, you could see the moment at which a person...
What's this guy into?
Finished.
When they finished watching the movie.
I read
it. But the funny thing was, so my gym teacher returns it, and what is the genre? One of the very few we had in the library, master-slave relationship.
Oh.
It was a total BDSM thing, and it was like, and my gym teacher was such a dick. So just see, he pretended not to recognize me, which was great.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah.
That is awesome.
I remember one thing in Film Threat that sticks with me, and you guys would have these cool little art things, pre-Photoshop, made up art cartoons and stuff. And
I did a bunch of those, like altered photography.
Did
and
you
like,
do the one that said, my name is Tom Cruise and I'm dumb as a box of dirt?
I didn't do that one, no. But that, yes, I do. That was, that was a piece of art in Film Threat. But the one I'm really proud of, I did this alternate history if James Dean had lived.
Because
I was really obsessed with James Dean. Yeah. I went to like visit his town where he grew up went to the gift shop there and just, I loved his movies. I saw them in the theater at a rep theater when I was a kid.
Did you buy a Porsche replica?
I did not buy a Porsche replica, but I read so many books about James Dean. I read a book just about the day he died, which is really frightening. But so, but the story in it was this alternate history, like if he had lived, and if he had lived, he would have played the space wizard Obi-Wan Kenobi in an obscure film from the 70s called Star Wars, which tanked at the box office the year that Can't Stop the Music won the Oscar for Best Picture. So I was really proud of, like, if you look at this photo, this is pre-Photoshop. We just did this sort of cutout, and then we would just, like, blend it.
Yeah.
You had to do it by hand, right?
Yeah.
Pre-Photoshop. And so it was, like, this photo, and it's the famous scene where Obi-Wan gives Luke the lightsaber, but it's James Dean sitting there. We had to, like, age him, too, and make it fit. So.
Wow.
Hustler did that stuff, too. They would do the cut.
Well, Film Threat was... Yeah. Kind of associated with Hustler.
Yeah, oh no, definitely. So what happened was an editor of Hustler magazine, this guy named Alan McDonnell, loved Film Threat.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we did this parody. The thing that got me hired was I did this parody of the California Raisins. This was in the late 80s, and they were doing this campaign. The California Raisins, they were those dancing raisins
right.
that Will Vinton did the stop motion animation for.
Right.
And I Can I swear?
You swear your ass off.
I fucking hated those commercials and those promos. I just hated them. I thought they were like annoying. So I did a parody of it, a photo parody of it that was a fumetti. A fumetti is like it's like a comic strip, but it's done with photography. Yeah. So it looked just like a comic book, but with photos. Mm-hmm. So I did a fumetti 2-page spread called The California Runs. And it was this girl goes into the bathroom and she's got a stomach ache and she just takes a crap and misses the toilet and the little poops end up dancing. They look like California raisins. And one of the guys that's in the photo, in that photo shoot, and this is like in 1987 or 88, he is the guy who founded Craigslist. In the photo shoot. He's from Detroit, and it was a mutual friend. I wasn't friends with him, but the friend of mine who was in the photo shoot was friends with this guy, and was like, oh yeah, that's Craig from Craigslist.
Holy shit.
So he saw this. He said, dude, I got to hire you to write comedy for Hustler. So 1989, he actually gave me a job offer, and I'm a college dropout at that point. I dropped out of school like 2.5 years into going to school. I thought, well, I can give all my money to college, or I can like spend my money on publishing Film Threat. And that was the path I chose.
That's what I should
Ironically,
have done.
Years later, college dropout, one of my books that I wrote is required reading in college for film programs.
Which book?
This book I wrote, The Ultimate Film Festival Survival Guide.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So this guy, Alan McDonnell, said, look, I love what you do in Film Threat, the parody stuff, the humor. Like, can you write for Hustler? Yeah, so he gives me a job offer. I get put all my stuff in a truck, move out with my girlfriend to LA. This is like September 1989. And I'm given a budget. I'm told to come up with jokes. And I came up with stupid jokes like The Revenge of Anne Frank, which was a parody movie poster that we did.
Yeah.
So I would do like parody movie posters, and like the level of humor, because it was Hustler, was, I used to say it's toilet poo poo homo butt.
Yeah. So
anything in that realm.
After the Jerry Falwell thing?
Oh, yeah, this is after the Jerry Falwell thing. So, and it was weird because all that stuff I was around, like, you know, like the Pink Alert was a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you'd go into the office and you'd see, like, tracks on the floor that there had been a wheelchair, it's like, Pink Alert, Pink Alert, everybody. And the weird thing was they had a dress code, too, at Hustler. Like, you had to wear ties.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is, like, there's naked people in the magazine, yet we had to be, like,
Professional,
yeah. Which I actually like. Like, actually, when it comes to corporate environments, because I've worked for other companies, there was far less of sexual harassment or stuff because sex was, like, always on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am. I'm, like, writing for Hustler and editor of this section of the magazine during the day. And then at night, I would go and work on Film Threat. Of course, I stole so many office supplies while I worked at Hustler. I still have some of the office supplies. Literally, to this day, I've got sort of brownish post-it notes from that era.
I want my paper clips back.
Oh, I could do a perfect imitation.
Please.
This is Larry Flynn. I just was looking at the latest issue of Hustler. The bits and pieces.
So I could do like the breathing. And if I put myself on speakerphone, I would scare the shit out of my coworkers.
Oh, really? You'd prank them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So we did this. So I did this section called Bits and Pieces.
I remember that.
Parodies and stuff. Yeah. Oh, you do remember it well. A frequent reader of Hustler. This is good.
I was.
Yeah. So you have a wide variety, or you have a wide palette when it comes to your media tastes.
Well, you could read.
I do as well. Like, look, you know.
You could read Playboy and find out stereo equipment that you can't afford and how to put it together.
Yes.
Or you could read Hustler and for Bits and Pieces and the comics throughout. And
yes.
Chester the Molester, which is gone now, of course.
Yes. Done by Dwayne Tinsley.
Yes.
I knew he had an office near mine. But no, it was a weird time for me, but it was the first time working in a professional environment. And I had like money and budget to do things, and it was so fun. I was constantly trying to rework or work things to have Film Threat, you know, like I was stealing office supplies and using stuff there and using their fax machine, and you know, like it helped with the budget of Film Threat. It actually helped. And Alan McDonnell kinda knew and turned a blind eye. He didn't care. You know, as long as I did my job and turned in everything on time, he was cool with that. So then later I convinced Larry Flint, because he loved the Bits and Pieces section. He actually did a best of Bits and Pieces. I only have one copy of it. And like we did more fumetti stuff. I did a parody of The Brain That Wouldn't Die, also known as The Head That Wouldn't Die. It's one of my favorite 1950s schlock B movies. And I did a porn parody of that in the pages of Hustler. And then I became friends with these guys. I was in Night of the Living Dead as a zombie.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah, the one with Tony Todd and Patricia Tallman, it was the remake that was directed by Tom Savini. So I knew two of the makeup artists, and they invited me to the set, and I wrote an article in Film Threat. And then I got those makeup artists, they worked on shows like Babylon 5, I got them to do makeup effects for Hustler magazine.
Great.
Where I actually had money to do stuff.
Right.
So it was kind of fun. Like, I'd get friends to work on Hustler and pay them well, and then come work for Film Threat where I'll pay you shit.
Yeah.
You know, but you get the byline, right?
Right.
But eventually I ended up selling Film Threat to Larry Flynt because I pitched it to the CEO of the company. I said, look, I said, you do an irreverent adult magazine. They called them Men's Sophisticates.
Yeah.
That was the name. Sophisticates. And every time someone came in the office, they had this thing called, everyone called it the Wall of Shame.
Yeah.
And it was like Hot Boat Magazine, you know, a PC laptop, shaved beaver. it was always like these weird, like, you know, sort of like respectable magazines mixed in with like Blacktail.
Yeah.
Was also a real magazine that existed there.
Remember the titles of the movies that they would sell in the back of Hustler, where you would get the 9-hour compilation, and one of them was called Girls Who Suck Cock and Eat Gum. I want part two.
That's where Kevin Smith got a bunch of those names for the Cassini clerks.
Yeah.
From the back of Hustler.
Wow. So that was cool. So I pitched them. I said, look, you do an irreverent adult magazine. You do an irreverent music magazine, which was Rip Magazine, a heavy metal magazine at the time. So I said, why don't you do an irreverent movie magazine? It's an irreverent entertainment magazine. So
seems like a no-brainer.
They bought it. Yeah, they bought it hook, line, and sinker. When I say they bought it, they didn't give me money for it. They let me do it.
Oh, okay.
Right. But I was making like, God, at the time I was making like lower than, I think it was making like 18 grand a year, which was like.
Even in 89.
Yeah, 89, I was rough. But
yeah.
but whatever, I was like, oh my God, I'm living my dream. I'm doing the thing that I get to do and getting paid barely to do it, which I didn't mind. So that was great. And then Larry Flynt owned it, and then the rights reverted back to me when they looked to sell it, and there was a big magazine crash in the late 90s.
Right, magazines kind of died.
Yeah, magazines died in the late 90s. They're still not dead, but the late 90s, most alternative magazines died for a very specific reason. A bunch of advertisers just decided not to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I had like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in money that was owed to me for advertising in the magazine. And then also paper prices went through the roof because they just went through the roof. I mean, deforestation is how you make paper is you chop down forests. The U.S. government will not allow a non-carcinogenic, it's like a form of hemp that doesn't get you high. You could grow that and harvest it for paper. But the U.S. government will not allow that.
That's right.
At the time, I don't know, that may
have
changed.
No, they don't now. I think they're allowing Kentucky to do it.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, that's funny because that's where Larry Flynt's from, Kentucky. Right. So, but like at the time, that totally changed the landscape. So all these alternative magazines went under. Spy Magazine, The Nose in San Francisco, like all these magazines
George.
That I loved. I was addicted to magazines. I had 50 magazine subscriptions.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, it was crazy. I collected them, you know, like I loved magazines.
I collected, get as many as I could get. I'd get Film Threat, I would get Spy, which was funny and irreverent. It was like Mad for grown-ups.
Yes.
National Lampoon.
Well, that died before then, even.
Yeah, it did.
But when you could get it.
But it was the paper prices that killed alternative media.
That.
And it wasn't until later, but the internet was kind of happening at the same time, so I relaunched Film Threat as a website in like 96, 97.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there was that period, and then I got the magazine back. I only did two or three issues. It tanked, and then I put out the website.
Mm-hmm.
Then the website grew and kind of grew. And
speaking of the website, you're doing a Kickstarter.
A Kickstarter to bring it back. I did, like, a couple years ago, I God, every time I sell Film Threat, I never get money for it. I'm sort of the worst business person. But I got the rights back to it, and I did a Kickstarter to try and bring it back, and then that failed. And now I'm doing a new Kickstarter to bring it back. After that first Kickstarter failed, I had a lot of people volunteer. Well, like, hey, I can help you with this. This part can't be for free, but we can do this for you. So I took it's a sophisticated relational database. And relational databases are not like a typical website. It's just more complicated because there's more than 80,000 stories on the site. There's the print edition of the magazine. Like, I've had every issue scanned.
Right. Oh, wow.
So
that's what I'm really looking forward
yeah,
to.
So, yeah, so what I want to do is bring back the website, and you donated to the campaign.
I donated.
Oh, thank you so much.
I tried to get your hat, but I missed it.
Oh, that's okay. There's other exclusive stuff that's up there
now. You're going to be sending me one of your DVDs.
Oh, that's great. Oh, good. I'll make sure. Well, what I do plan to do is, because when the old campaign failed, I was under no obligation to give anyone anything, but I sent everyone buttons that said Save Film Threat, a little pin that said Save Film Threat. I said, look, I may do this again. Thank you for contributing. You don't have to give me anything, no money, but thank you. So that was kind of my thank you to everybody. And I appreciate it. Believe me, I will over-deliver what I'm saying. You're going to get a gift pack,
Nice.
Not just the DVD. There are more things that will be in that package. Sweet. But I don't want to say, I'm going to say, here's what you get. But
yeah. It's going to be Hustler notepads.
Yeah, the Hustler. Yeah. Hustler, you're going to believe. Yeah, you're going to get lots of office supplies.
Larry Flint's paperclips.
But the thing is, I need the money to bring the website back, a very sophisticated website. Mm-hmm. And I want to really do it right. And I want to put, also indie filmmakers in a good light. I feel like now indie film is kind of, it's struggling at the moment. And I'm looking forward to, I really feel like there's a new generation of filmmakers that are getting no attention because the air is kind of sucked out by attention for DC films and Marvel movies and Star Wars. It's all franchises that get the attention when it comes to,
when you look at anything, all that's coming out are remakes.
Yeah.
Even in films that don't deserve remakes. So I kind of see what you're saying because there needs to be another revolution in film.
Well, I think that there should be. I mean, with our iPhones, you can make an entire feature film on your iPhone, cut it, shoot it, put music to it, and make one.
And Atlanta's a good place for that because the film industry's moved here, so it's allowing some indies to go out and make their films while they're here.
Well, I want to support those movies and then also do the same thing that Film Threat's always done, which is poke fun at the Hollywood establishment.
Yes.
Basically give a middle finger to Hollywood. But in a fun way that points up that there are issues. I want to get back into the game to drive the conversation.
Yeah.
Because I look at a lot of the websites, it's I can't believe you think this.
Well, they're all
drives me crazy.
Sycophantic. They all kind of push the same narrative. Whenever there's something big, like a movie like Star Wars comes out, every single site is giving it this is great, and there's no one saying this sucks except for Mr. Plinkett on Red Letter Media.
There's,
if you're familiar
some good
with
guys
that
out there, I mean, there's Drew at HitFix, Drew McQueenie, and there's Devin Faraci and Birth Death Movies. There's good stuff out there, but the one thing I know about those guys is, with all due respect to them, if either of them is listening, I think they take themselves very seriously, and I don't take myself seriously.
Right. I had to unfriend Devin because of his comments about Kevin Smith. But.
Yeah, he's, I don't know, but they take themselves way too seriously. Look, I don't take myself seriously. I like to think I have a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I take my work seriously, so I just feel like that the sense of humor needs to come back and kind of poke holes in that. So so I don't know. There's something I feel like I've had enough of a break from Film Threat that I really miss being a part of that. And I'm just very passionate about it. And I also think I've got these archives and they're filmmakers and the old writers of Film Threat that are upset. These archives are gone. This is a huge archive of content and material that is wiped off the internet. And I want to give the old issues for free. One of my plans is, because I actually, there's certain issues of Film Threat I don't have, right? I'm missing five out of the, I have one of every issue except for five.
And do you have fans who are willing to?
I have fans that have allowed me to borrow the issues to scan.
Scan, okay.
So every issue of Film Threat is scanned. Every issue of Film Threat is scanned. So what I want to do is you'll be able to go to the website, look up that issue, look at the PDF, download it, print it out if you want.
Oh, that's awesome.
Look at it, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a podcast where you'll be able to look at, there's the issue, and then underneath you can click and listen to a podcast about that issue.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah, so commentary track, which I miss,
Kind of a commentary about that particular issue of Film Threat. But we're also, I'm launching my own podcast network. There'll be a Film Threat podcast. There'll be one for indie filmmakers. And I'll give you an example of one of the podcasts we're going to do because there's a lot of podcasts out there, a lot of movie podcasts that are we just get together and we bullshit and talk about movies. And I feel like you need to have a focus. So one of the podcasts is hosted by a guy named Patty Hawkins, who is a Florida-based writer and performer. He's doing a podcast called Dick on Film.
Yeah. Okay.
The Dick on Film podcast, which is a 30-minute podcast every week.
Don't forget that.
Dick on Film, every week, reviews a movie in which Dick Miller, character actor was in the movie.
Oh, that's great.
And that's he's been in over 200 movies. Right. So this podcast could go on for 4 years. He was in Terminator. He was in Gremlins. There was even a documentary about Dick Miller. So the purpose is going to be to talk about a new Dick Miller movie. And pretty much every movie, he plays a cashier or a guy behind a counter. Right. What can I help you with, kid? You know, it's Dick Miller. So Dick on Film will talk about. Awesome. So these are the types of podcasts that we're going to be doing, is very specific. You know, ones for indie filmmakers only, ones that are like, you know, for bad movies, mm-hmm. you know, ones that, like the Dick on Film. So the Film Threat Podcast Network, as you know, the value of a podcast network is shared resources, whether it's equipment, editing, advertising, all of that stuff. A podcast network gets you more listeners, and I don't have to sell you on it because you run one.
Well,
this is, I'm setting you up for a, you can do a plug for your podcast network.
And if you'd like to, go to twofacesradio.com and
seriously.
Check out the Two Faces Radio Podcast Network.
Getting real meta here, we started off on Two Faces, and then we got an email from some company that said, hey, you're trending on iTunes, we want to do revenue share with you. So we went to Audio Boom, which is our host now.
Oh, nice.
And I looked
at it. Is it better than Libsyn?
I've
used Libsyn before for a podcast I used to do.
Yeah,
Podcrash,
which I'm going to be bringing back.
I was going to ask you if you're going to bring that back.
It's part of the Film Threat Podcasting Network.
But I discovered that everybody on that is former radio or current radio. I got fired from radio a year ago.
Oh wow!
And I'm still doing once a week, like a political thing where I just do voices and stuff. But this was a daily morning show that I was on for 10 years, and they fired the two hosts, brought in a new guy. He didn't like me. I got. You know, goodbye. And everybody from that radio genre is doing these podcasts. They take their show, and I'll shut up after this, but they do a show that they get paid for, and very well, by the way, in a market like Atlanta, and then they give the whole thing away after the show on a podcast. So it's stupid to give away something that you need to force people to listen to so you can get ratings and ad revenue. So it really is a parking space for just radio shows dumping their podcasts. And I kind of want to go back to doing our thing because we control everything and we have more ideas. So I like that idea.
And I like the idea also of a podcast, because I think it adds a little bit more. You have to choose to, you know, you got to put it on your Stitcher or on your wherever. But
but people make a choice to listen to it, and they're real fans. Like,
it's so shareable.
That young man sitting right over there is a huge fan.
One of our fans. People go to... check out your Kickstarter.
Oh, so you can go to filmthreat.com. Mm-hmm. Actually points directly to the Kickstarter.
Okay.
So just go to filmthreat.com. The campaign ends September 25th.
And it's been going for like 2 weeks now?
It's going for, 2 weeks.
And
we're like
a third?
31%, 32%. Right. We're close. Like, this is a holiday weekend.
Right.
No one's donated. I mean, it hasn't, the needle hasn't moved, but it's holiday weekend. Come Tuesday, that's when there's hardcore, I'm just going to press for it. I send you the link? The private link to the documentary?
Yes.
Okay, so our first stretch goal, if we actually make the we're going for $37,500. Sounds like a lot of money, but it's basically going to run Film Threat for a year to help us get going. Once we get ad revenue, that'll just sustain.
Yeah.
But we need those initial costs to just get the website back, the archives online, and everything functioning and working. And along with an app that we're going to give away. But one of our first stretch goals is money towards a documentary about Film Threat. I've been approached over the years numerous times about doing a documentary about Film Threat by some prominent filmmakers, and I was approached by a filmmaker a little over a year ago, and we've put together, he digitized 100 plus hours of VHS footage from the 90s. We scanned 5,000 plus photos. We have this media library of stuff to draw from, news reports about Film Threat from the 90s. It's basically a 90s period piece.
Yeah.
What we need money for is we need to shoot the, you know, interviews with people today.
Right.
Which we don't need that much money for that. I think we're going to get an extra $12,500, which will pay for travel, you know, and for like a month of shooting interviews, which is everything that we'll need then for the documentary to edit. Then it's all about editing. Mm-hmm. So I sent Jeff the private link to the trailer, which once we get to 50% funding, I'll actually release the trailer as an enticement to people. Please let us finish out. Like, please, you know, and any money that's above the amount that we raise will go towards the documentary.
Cool.
Wow.
So,
that's
looking forward to it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool story, like kind of Film Threat paralleling like indie film at the time and all the weird hijinks and crazy stories. I mean, I told you some of them.
Yes.
Yeah. But there are a lot of weird,
but there's so many more.
There are a lot more. So I'm writing a book in conjunction with the doc. So the book I'm writing is called Film Threat Sucks. Because not a week goes by where someone is, you suck, or Film Threat Sucks. And I always just sort of like, that's why it's like the internet trolls don't, it doesn't bother me, because like I got that since I was doing Film Threat from the beginning. You know, I would receive letters in the mail. I actually have a letter from Steven Soderbergh, who sent me a letter basically telling me to go fuck myself. Yeah. And that, you know, you're an idiot. And by the way, encloses a check for all your back issues and a subscription to Film Threat.
Oh, very nice.
So, and maybe that'll be something in the archives. Maybe I'll put that up, right, you know, for sale, you know. Yeah, in fact, I have this whole archive of stuff from Film Threat. Chris Prynoski, who's doing the T-shirt that we're going to sell for the Kickstarter campaign, he gave me some office space at Titmouse to work on the documentary. So all the Film Threat archives are there, and Chris's company, Titmouse Animation Studios, yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with.
Don't they do
Venture Brothers?
Venture Brothers, that's what I was thinking.
Metalocalypse, yeah. You know, they do a lot of Adult Swim shows. When they did, they don't do a lot of animation on Adult Swim anymore.
Right.
But so Chris is doing about 10 to 15 minutes of animation for the documentary. Wow. Because there are stories that will be told in the documentary that we have no supporting footage or photography for. Mm-hmm. So we're going to, it's going to go off in the realm of animating that part,
which will be
story,
funny as hell. Yeah.
Which will be funny. So there'll be about 10 or 15 minutes of animation throughout the doc. But I'm just, the doc has been a thing. I mean, we're talking, this is 2 years from now. So the Film Threat Sucks book, the documentary, and then there's another book that's being done by a guy named Robert St. Mary, and the title of that book is The Worst of Film Threat. Mm. And it's going to be a coffee table book that will be like all stories, like reprints
scans
and stuff.
From the,
scans.
Yeah.
The story of it. My book is from my perspective. This book is sort of an omniscient, like it covers everyone that had anything to do with Film Threat. It's like sort of the warts and all. And then there'll be like unpublished articles and a lot of other cool stuff.
That's
so
fucking awesome.
Yeah, because
awesome. There's an entire issue of Film Threat that never got printed.
And that'll be released?
And that'll be in that book. Uh-huh. So the stories from that will be in the book. So it's pretty cool. But this is like 2 to 3 years down the line. That's how long it takes to make a good documentary.
Well, yeah. Well, I like it because this whole genre, this whole time period is when we grew up, the Gen
X. The 90s.
The Gen X people.
Yeah.
And it's like nowadays, everybody says, fuck you, Gen X, because nobody cares about us.
Right.
They care about millennials, and they care about still, for some reason, the baby boomers. We're just kind of floating
right.
on.
Look
at the
two
presidential
candidates.
Middle
generation.
Yeah.
What do we do? You know? But yes, but I do believe that like 90s nostalgia is going to be, I mean, it's already kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by the time this documentary comes out, it's really, I mean, I was, the footage that I'm looking at, because I had a VHS camcorder when I was in my early 20s and filmed a lot of stuff. I would film because I moved from Michigan, you know, Detroit, Michigan to Los Angeles. I missed my family. So I would send my family back videotapes like, here's the office where I work. Here's the Film Threat office. And here's
Larry Flynn.
Here's what I'm doing. And whatever. Like, so I was constantly sending videos back to my family of like what I was doing. So there's a lot of footage that we have like from that period to tell the story of Film Threat. And every time we'd have a barbecue or a party, I'd film it. There's like footage of Quentin Tarantino was at a party of mine. Yeah, this is before he shot Reservoir Dogs.
Wow.
We had this like
what
crazy,
was he doing then?
He worked at a video store.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But he was cool, and we did a story on Reservoir Dogs, the shooting of it. This is before it came out, and he came to my house, and it was just like a weird party.
Nice.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So, Jeff will keep...
Filmthreat.com.
Yeah, filmthreat.com. Go check it out. I hope you guys decide to contribute to the Kickstarter. I'll
spend an awful lot of time there in the next couple of...
Check it out. Like, there's cool, like... There's, like, one-of-a-kind things that are just, like, I just put up. I have one.
See, I cut mine up. I used to cut them up because I used to make collages in the 90s and mail them to my friends.
So, you and Winston Smith.
Who?
I don't know if you know. Winston Smith did the covers of, you know, the Dead Kennedys album
cover. Yeah. I didn't know his name,
Winston
but
Smith was a San Francisco-based artist who did, he did
Convenience.
Some artwork. Yes.
That poster inside of it? Yeah.
Yes. He did some artwork for Film Threat, too.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, that guy's freaking awesome. So he's one of those collage artists where you go like, oh, well, someone put like intense effort into this,
yes.
You know?
And I would spend hours just with the X-Acto knife cutting them out and then the rubber cement. And I took Michael Stipe. He was wearing a cowboy hat and I put him on a porn ad, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Love that stuff.
Filmthreat.com.
Filmthreat.com.
Yes, thank you.
Even if you just give a dollar or whatever you can afford.
Throw it. More than that.
Come on. I'm just saying.
This is going to be
good
stuff.
Well, just go get the DVD. You know. I mean, DVDs are $20 anyways, right. or $25. Right. Bucks. Yeah. Like, you know, contribute. You get a DVD. Believe me, you'll get extra stuff, too.
Right. I can afford $20.
Yeah, exactly.
And just I don't have a job.
Yeah, there you go. But no, but I appreciate the support. And it's also just, I love this. I love talking about movies. Like, I've been doing panels. I'm doing I'll have done 5 panels by the time Dragon Con is over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing actually DVD Tuesday tonight.
Right.
So DVD Tuesday, my segment from Attack of the Show, which I will bring back as a podcast, part of the Film Threat Podcast Network.
Right,
nice.
So yeah, no, I'm really excited about like what the possibilities are. Like having all this technical stuff set up will allow me to be able to do.
Are you limiting it to stuff that's actually coming out on physical DVDs, or are you talking about
no,
stuff that's being streamed?
Streamed and downloaded. Yeah, no, it's going to be. Believe me, the definition of DVD Tuesday will be very broad. We will broaden that definition. Plus, talking about like classic stuff, like I love one of the things I love is if you discovered this. There's a whole like. Culture of VHS collectors now.
Yes.
Unbelievable. I saw a copy of The Groove Tube on VHS.
Oh, yeah.
And then I picked up a movie called Vasectomy the Movie.
Ouch.
And I think who was in it? It was Paul. God, he's been in a million movies, a character actor. I forget his
Rudd?
Name. Paul. No, not Paul Rudd. No, I'm talking older actor.
Yeah.
But anyways, Vasectomy the Movie I bought on VHS at a VHS collectors group. And there's a whole obsession. And these movies, none of these are on DVD.
Right.
They're not being shown everywhere. And you find them on VHS and it's crazy. I mean, I had a whole like sort of fetish for like the different types. There was the clamshell packaging.
Right. Uh-huh.
Remember that? Then there was the CBS Fox Home Video. It had the slide case,
right.
which I had my copy of Return of the Jedi in that.
Why were the porno DVD or VHS boxes so huge?
Because for theft.
Ah.
The reason that porn boxes were in those big oversized things is because people would take them. You could see that someone was stealing. Right. That's the reason they were big.
They didn't see me.
Yeah, exactly. But in VHS, you could put in your jacket and kind of walk.
I'm a booth guy from birth.
Yeah. But yeah, no, theft was, we had to lock up the porn. You had to, like, if you wanted porn at the place that I worked, which was Thomas Video in Royal Oak, Michigan, which was one of the last holdouts. I mean, it's out of business now, but it was one of the last holdouts of video stores. That's where I worked, like, from high school through college.
We had a store in our little town of Mansfield, PA, called The Movie Store. And one of the kids of the people who owned it actually is now one of the head writers for Law & Order SVU.
Kevin Fox.
Yeah, Kevin Fox.
Wow, see?
Well, we had Videodrome here.
And we still have Videodrome.
Well, we have Videodrome here, yeah, which is great.
This is awesome. I wish we could talk for like 6 hours and then cut this up and put it out over 6 weeks.
Well, you could do a part two. I do talk a lot.
Well.
You could break it up into a part two. If there's a natural, and we'll be back after these messages.
Now, let's say we had a podcast that we could pitch to the Film Threat Podcast Network. It would be something very specific. I know you're going to take care of it.
Peripherally movie related.
We do a thing called hashtag called Bad Reboot.
Yeah, we'll just talk
bad
about
reboot.
That.
Yeah.
Bad reboots. Yeah.
And we talk about that on the podcast quite a bit. And we're getting some shirts made up with our
stolen J.J. Abrams logo.
It's kind of a parody of the J.J. Abrams.
That. Well, we're doing one of the podcasts we are doing is about tentpole movies, big movies. It's called Blockbuster Busters.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
And we just did the theme music for it, which sounds kind of like the theme song to Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Right.
Blockbuster Busters.
Did you see Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I hated it. Yeah. I thought it was terrible. And
everybody
it was had nothing to do with those actresses are brilliant.
Right.
Yeah, I loved Spy. I don't know if you saw the Melissa McCarthy.
Right.
Spy was great.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people said.
But this is not a good movie. It's not a good Ghostbusters movie. And all the people, Kate McKinnon, extremely talented, Kristen Wiig, like a very talented group, Leslie Jones, they just shouldn't have made it a Ghostbusters movie. They should have done Stranger Things is on Netflix is the sort of amalgam of a lot of different things.
Yes.
Sort of like little like E.T., a little like Goonies. It's a little Poltergeist. Stand By Me. It's a little bit of a lot of different things, but they didn't reboot Stand By Me.
Right.
They didn't remake Goonies. They just did what they should have done is done a completely different story about a bunch of girls. And it could have been influenced or inspired by. You don't need to remake these franchises.
Right, yeah.
And Sony has just blown it on these things that they've tried to reboot.
Well, you read that email hacks?
Yeah, oh, God.
Where he's talking to the producers, like, we could do this and we could do this. And everything that they talked about happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Those hacks are great if you haven't had a chance to read
them. Amazing. But no, that Ghostbuster movie is just a bad movie.
Yeah, bad idea.
Part of it is that the original Ghostbuster was such a well-scripted movie. Mm-hmm. Something that Dan Aykroyd, who believes in the spirit realm,
right.
and that like he understands the science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever heard Dan Aykroyd talk about, he was on the Howard Stern Show talking about all this stuff.
Right.
He is brilliant, as a brilliant mind. So that script was so tight, right? That script was an incredible script. And yes, they played with stuff and they did a little bit, but they stuck to the script. The problem is with Ghostbusters is the way modern comedies are made, which is we kind of have this loose story. We have a franchise we know people already are aware of, which will help with the marketing. Let's just try stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Because the original cut of Ghostbusters was like 3.5 hours long. I'm talking the new one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all this like, well, Kristen Wiig is funny and Melissa McCarthy's funny. Just let them say funny things.
Right.
And we'll do 900 takes of them saying different funny things. You can't make a movie out of that. You really need to have something heavily scripted, like the movie Stripes,
right.
which I believe is a comedy classic. That movie also incredibly tightly scripted.
Somebody said the other day that started out as a Cheech and Chong.
Judge Reinhold said it at his panel. He
well, that's a true...
Cheech
no,
and
that's,
Chong joined the Army.
Holy
yeah,
shit.
No, it was Cheech and Chong joined the Army. It
Boy,
was
I'm glad
supposed
that
to be the follow-up to Up in Smoke. But I believe it was Cheech Marin had the opportunity to direct Up in Smoke 2.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to direct it. Yeah, but they wrote... So they had to change it. And Judge Reinhold's character, who was a stoner, his part was really big, actually, in the original script, and they just totally cut it down.
Right.
So he's not as big of a character in the way that Stripes turned out. And they had to completely rewrite it, make it not so much a stoner. But if you look, watch the DVD, there's actually a cut scene where they all get high, and that was from the original script. Huh. It just didn't fit, you know?
Right.
But yeah, no, you've got to, if you watch the DVD, they talk about it on the commentary, and there's deleted scenes that are like, oh, this is a stoner comedy. It, like, didn't fit Stripes. It didn't fit the story that was, it was a Bill Murray vehicle.
Then. So this is why you need DVDs, not just streaming everything.
Right, that's what I miss about that.
That's the thing, like, they've started little. They've started where, like, they've put out things available for digital that include special features.
Right.
But how do you do commentary? Commentary, to me, is, like, a great podcast. One of the best people who does commentary is Steven Soderbergh. Soderbergh begins every commentary that he does. He says these words. He says, "And now for another episode of two white guys talking about movies." And he invites the screenwriter of the film onto the commentary to discuss how the movie turned out, right?
Because
movies change so much from screenplay to finished product.
Right.
And he brought on the screenwriter of The Limey, I forget his name, and they get in a huge fight during the commentary.
Oh, really?
The guy from The Limey is just pissed and just railing at Soderbergh. And Soderbergh very calmly is kind of... you know, defending his position about why he made certain choices. But I love DVD commentaries. I'm addicted to them, and I'm afraid that stuff's going to go away.
I feel like they're trying to get it, you know, more prominent.
I like having a tangible thing in your hand that you can hold and look at and put on a shelf.
Also, your Wi-Fi doesn't always work.
Right.
So if your Wi-Fi's out or something happens, you know what I can do? I can put a DVD into a machine and it plays on my television.
Right. Right.
So I do like movies like Vudu. Like on Vudu, I prefer Vudu to iTunes.
What's Vudu?
Movies. Vudu is one of those streaming services for movies. So you'll purchase a film and then you get the digital copy, which is also on Vudu.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point I'm like, I've kind of looked at all the extras on this. I can sell this for used, but I still have the movie.
Right. Okay.
So and then Disney movies, they have this thing called Disney Movies Anywhere.
Yeah.
So if you buy a Disney movie, if you register with their app on Disney Movies Anywhere, you have that movie everywhere.
Okay.
You have it on iTunes. You have it on YouTube. You have it on the Disney Movies Anywhere app. You have it on Vudu. If you own the film, you own it digital on all platforms.
That's great.
And I love that. So
except
it's like,
I registered for that, and then every time I open my computer, like Frozen was trying to download every time.
Well, you don't
stop.
You don't have to download the movies.
Yeah, I know.
You can have that option. You can change it. But like, I like the idea that you can, like, you have a digital copy of it. You know what I mean? So it's like, I could be at my friend's house. It's like, oh, we'll just log into my account. There's like 300 voodoo movies. You know, what do we want to watch? 2001? You know, like I have it. So it's like, it's for me, convenience. You
Ghostbusters
know,
can, 2.
Ghostbusters 2 you can watch or not.
Or not and say, hey, you know, we saw it in the theater. We can forget about it
now. But the drag about that Ghostbusters movie, you know, is that all the controversy surrounding it around, you know, the female cast, I think too much was made of that. And then that got that a lot of hate, and then I think that the hate actually influenced the movie. I don't know if you saw it.
Yep.
Like basically, the guy who's the main villain is sort of a troll hater.
Right.
It's so stupid, and like, oh, he shouldn't have reacted. You know what? Just make a good movie where I care about the characters, and they couldn't do that.
Yeah, Paul Feig.
Yeah. I like Paul Feig, and two of us at the table share a birthday with him.
Yeah, I like Paul Feig. I really do. I thought Spy. If you watch the unrated Spy, right. It's fantastic.
I miss his stand-up because he was a funny stand-up comedian too. Back in the day.
He's great, man. I mean, but Ghostbusters, and I don't know that I totally blame him on that. I feel like...
It's Sony.
Sony has a bad... They're just not good at shepherding these projects. I mean, look at the Spider-Man debacle. They made those two movies which were intended to be like four movies. They were going to make four Spider-Man movies. Then they were going to make the Sinister Six, and it was a mess. I mean, those movies were terrible.
Right.
Both of those amazing Spider-Man movies. I hated them. I was in the second one. I was just felt insulted by.
Which is the second one? The one with
the Rhino and.
Oh yeah, I didn't see it.
It was just awful.
I didn't like the Jamie Foxx Electro movie.
Yeah, how they always would play that rap music.
Yeah.
Every time his character would come out, the stupid rap music. You know, because he's black.
Yeah.
It was just stupid.
Right.
It was just insulting and stereotypical and. Yeah. Irritating, and Andrew Garfield was sort of a cool. I always thought he was like the Poochie of Spider-Man, Peter Parker, because he was just like riding a skateboard.
Yeah.
Peter Parker was never cool. Peter Parker was a dweeb and a nerd, and he was, you know, bullied, and you know he couldn't use his powers. You know, he had to kind of trick the bullies so he wouldn't get his ass kicked. But I didn't like Andrew Garfield's take on the character.
Right.
I thought it was awful.
The only thing
I love the new Spider-Man.
I like the new Spider-Man because I like the costume.
They're shooting it now.
It's not
the new one.
Not this ripped, ridiculous thing. It's just a kid with
he's
a suit.
He's gangly skinny. Right. When you watch Civil War, he's skinny like Steve Ditko originally drew,
exactly.
drew him.
Well,
go to filmthreat.com.
Thanks, Jeff. I really appreciate it. No,
seriously,
like,
it was very nice meeting you. And no, Jeff was like, we got to talk to him. I'm like, yeah, let's talk to him. So this has like been very educational
for me. I try to make
it
easy on you. I do all the talking.
I'm fine with that.
I hope you'll sign my copy.
Of course.
Oh, look at this.
Oh, wow. Of course. Why wouldn't I?
Ham.
So your plans for the rest of the day is you're doing that panel.
I'm doing. Well, my plans for this day is probably go take a nap.
All right. Yeah.
Rest up for the last night at Comic-Con. I brought a Mr. Fantastic costume.
Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
With the arms?
Stretchy arms.
Okay.
I'm probably going to wear that later.
Yeah, I'm doing this.
Oh, nice. I love that. I'm good. I like that sort of subtle cosplay. Have you heard that thing like everyday cosplay?
I didn't commit.
Right. Fully. Right. But I love that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, and I'm doing my DVD Tuesday panel. But but if you go to filmthreat.com, you can check out the campaign, see how it's doing. Once we get to 50%, I'm going to release the link publicly to the trailer for the 3-minute trailer for the Film Threat documentary, which is years away, but we need to get started working on it. So
that's going to be awesome, man.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that. Really excited. So, you know, please contribute to the campaign. Basically, just go buy a DVD or a T-shirt. You know,
please do. Yeah, do it.
Or a poster. There's cool stuff.
Well, I want to
thank you guys for having me on the show.
A typical interview question for this.
Yes,
a film guy.
Yeah.
What just recently has blown you away in the theater? That you go see this now.
Okay, you're gonna have to seek it out.
Yeah.
But there's a movie that'll be out later this year. It's called Director's Cut.
Okay.
It's directed by a guy named Adam Rifkin. It was written by and stars Penn Jillette of the magical duo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Penn and Teller.
Right. The movie is about, it starts like a cop thriller. Okay. So it's like this cop thriller. You're watching this cop thriller. And then there's this weird fan that basically kidnaps the lead actress from the movie to recreate scenes in which he inserts himself and he re-edits the movie so it stars him. And it is the creepiest. It sort of has elements of like a creepy horror movie, but like the stalkery dude, but it makes fun of movies. It makes fun of movies and movie making. It makes fun of crowdfunding. Wow. It was made by crowdfunding, and it's one of the best things I've seen this year. It's called Director's Cut. after this podcast is over, we're going to watch the trailer on YouTube.
Okay.
Because it's so amazing. I want part of what I get a joy out of is discovery and telling people about cool stuff that they wouldn't know about unless they talk to me.
Well, see, and I seek out guys like you because I'm like, I don't know what there's too much out there. What's
there's
the good
too
stuff?
Much out there. Yeah. It's like, yes. And this was a bad summer for movies, man. Yeah, you think about it, like... You know, wow, like it was weird. Like Suicide Squad, disappointed.
No, Independence Day
Resurgence might be one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Did you see Sausage Party?
Star Trek Beyond,
I liked, I didn't love it. Mm. A Sausage Party I did kind of like as like a, you know, a take on Pixar movies. But it was the movies I expected to like, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have liked some more surprises.
Yeah.
But anyways,
I like Sausage Party I liked the most because it helped fund Stranger Things.
Yes, in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But yeah.
Seriously, thank you. And before you leave, you have 40-year-old gum there from the police company.
I will. I did chew it in
for
that.
Everybody.
Yeah. When we sign off on the podcast, we always say to keep it canon. So if you want to join us on that,
all right. Okay.
Keep it canon.
Radio Labyrinth is recorded in front of a live studio audience. Well, four of us, occasionally three, sometimes four, sometimes three. And is produced by you. For a complete list of Radio Labyrinth's awesome Patreon sponsors, just look at the show notes. Our intro theme was produced and performed by John Mark Lindell. Keep it canon.